And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We're heading to the last hour. Shortly, we're going to be joined by Pat McCart. He's going to be responding to comments from Taoiseach Simon Harris, who said people of his generation are more familiar with Berlin and Paris than they are with Belfast or Derry in the north. Does he agree? Does he disagree? We'll tease that out with Pat very shortly. Interested in your views out there as well. Good morning, Greg. I wonder if you can help me out with a matter. I've booked a holiday for this year. I'm also awaiting an operation, and it should be done before the holiday. I cannot get travel insurance as the operation is still to happen. Do you know of any companies that would quote for travel insurance? That comes in from Jay. Such a specific inquiry, Jay, but I'm sure you're not alone. So if anyone out there has a holiday booked or has had a holiday booked in the past, but in the meantime, and it's a year between now and then, in the meantime, they're due to have an operation and unable to get insurance. Now, it's important to get insurance as soon as you book a holiday. A lot of us do it at the last minute, but the insurance covers more than just, God forbid, you were to get ill. It covers cancellations and all manner of stuff as well. So it's important as soon as you book a holiday to get your insurance, so we can understand why this person is keen. Please, could you highlight the rising cost of running a small business in Donegal out of premises, the electricity bill rates, and can't get staff. It's harder to get money in off local people because the cost of living. The government gives no incentive to work. Most businesses are going to the wall. Two restaurants are closing per day since the start of this year, effectively. Shocking. Anyone in the industry that wants to talk about that, please let us know. Right, okay, so Taoiseach Simon Harris made a statement, a general statement, saying that people of his generation are more familiar with Berlin or Paris than they are with Belfast or Derry. He says those comments have been taken completely out of context. Pat McCart, author, columnist, former editor of the Derry Journal, joins us on the programme, podcaster, joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Greg.
Good to have you on the show. Right, okay, so listen, I get the point Simon Harris was trying to make. I just thought that the language he used excluded people all over the country that have got family in Derry and Belfast, people living along the border or slightly north of a certain line who are more familiar and in touch with Belfast and Derry than there might be Dublin and Cork. I thought his language excluded those people. As I say, I recognise the point he was trying to make, but what say you?
No, Greg, I actually agree with you, but I do think in the wider context, what Harris actually said, Simon Harris actually said, is pretty accurate. Greg, you know, you base everything on sort of empirical experience. Myself and my dear missus went down, I'd say, about 20 years ago. I think it was Longford, Greg. I'm not 100% certain. We stopped off in a town. We just booked into a wee hotel and stayed overnight. I went out to the bar, say, about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and I had a couple of pints and I was chatting like four or five people. And, Greg, not a single one of them had ever been to Donegal. Not a single one had ever been to Derry, and not a single one had ever been to Belfast. And Greg, if you go to places like Laois and away down there, Longford, most people there have never been north of the border. That's a fact. Now, Simon Harris said he was of a generation. In fact, he couldn't even vote in the Good Friday Agreement. He was too he was too young. And he was saying basically the only way we get to know each other is we have to interact and get to know each other on a personal level and so on. And he says that'll probably ease up, you know, any future discussions. What I think he was referring to was Irish unity. But the whole thing about it is, Greg, I heard you earlier on this morning. Without question, a lot of young Irish people and their parents have far more experience of Sydney, Melbourne, and other points off this island than they have with certain points on this island. And just to finish the point as well, Greg, I remember one day the legendary Gay Byrne was on, and I don't remember exactly who he was talking to, but I think it was an American guy, and the guy says to him, when I come out of Dublin Airport, he says, I always turn left. In other words, he was going south rather than turning right, which meant he was going north. And Gay said to him, why do you do that? And he said, well, for starters, now this is during the Troubles, he says, I don't have to go through two British Army checkpoints to get to Donegal. Now, as you remember, Greg, Gay Byrne was one of the biggest supporters of Donegal during the Troubles. He had a house in the Donegal area and all the rest of it. But no, Greg, I think I get the point Harris was actually making.
Yeah, if you live next to Shannon Airport, you probably are more familiar with the cities that he's mentioned. It's just the thing that frustrates me a little bit, Pat, in this day and age, especially when there are so many ways that we can communicate and engage with each other, is language. And you would just hope with someone in his position who represents the entire country, whether people like that or not, who's got a team of advisors way more than working perhaps the newsroom of this building and another newspaper, for an example, that they can't sort of use language that's inclusive at the same time.
Yeah.
That people felt their backs were up. Say, have you, you know, I was in Derry three times this week, yet I'm a member, I'm part, you know, I live in the Republic. And that's, it just talks to maybe a political class that are out of touch. And it wasn't really picked up in the media till some of us started giving out, because I don't think people who write the stories in Dublin would have seen anything wrong with what he's said. And that just kind of talks to a two-part Ireland or a three-part, four-part Ireland.
Well, Greg, I think it was you brought up the thing about, you know, the archaeology thing. Donegal is the only county that didn't get any funding. In fact, I get bored even repeating it myself. I regard Donegal as the forgotten county, the Cinderella county, where they are neither of the north nor of the south, and I've said that a million times. But the other thing as well, Greg, let me throw this at you. About Easter Monday, Bank Holiday Monday, myself and my wife and my second son, we went off to Cairnlough, one of the glens of Antrim. And we drove up, drive up past Coleraine, up Ballycastle, on to Cairnlough, one of the most beautiful wee villages you'll ever be in your life, anywhere in the world. Absolutely beautiful place. Anyway, on the way back, we decided to see if we could count how many cars with a Southern registration. Greg, we counted, I think, two. And that was a very busy Bank Holiday Monday. And, you know, people from the south just don't, even still, don't go north. There's all that sort of residual thing from the Troubles, fear and all the rest of it. And Greg, I worked in Dublin way back in the 1980s, and going through the north way back then was actually quite scary. A lot of people just didn't want to go through the north. There were stones thrown at cars with Southern registrations. There were, you know, when you parked your car somewhere in certain towns, there was a danger that you'd get, you know, whatever. And that's all part of the thing, Greg. So let's get back to the point you're making here. You're dead right. Maybe Simon Harris could have used more inclusive language. But there's a certain truth in what he said that maybe it needs saying. That,
yeah, but I've never been to Cork or Kerry. I'm embarrassed to say, but I've never been to Cork or Kerry. That's just a reality. I mean, he's talking obviously maybe then about sort of cultural differences. I don't know. And travelling to the north too as well, like, I have no problem with the north at all. My dad's from Tyrone and much of my family is. But I do remember a few years ago going to a caravan site just across the border in the south. And the local town, it was just like Union Jacks everywhere and people marching up and down the street. And I suppose, you know, that did feel a little bit intimidating. Maybe I was a bit more on my nerves at that stage. I'd be not as bothered now. I wasn't bothered by it, but it does feel very different. Like if someone from further south who didn't know what was going on experienced that, they might go, well, what's going on here? You know, I mean, you know, so
there's certain, like, if you go through outside of Coleraine, you go through places like Bushmills, and there's two or three other wee villages. You go through them and you'll find Union Jacks everywhere. There's a roundabout outside Limavady that's painted green, red, white and blue, which is not very welcoming, I got to admit, and so on. And I think what Harris is basically getting at, and there's a certain element to it, you know, and I'm, by the way, I'm repeating, the language could have been better. I'm not disputing for a second what you're saying. But the other side of the story is what he's basically saying. I think this whole, up until 2016, Greg, there was very, very little mention of Irish unity. It was not a hot button topic and all the rest of it. But since Brexit has become an everyday conversation, the demographics in the north have changed big time. The Catholics or the Nationalist community are now in the majority. Sinn Féin's the biggest party. Michelle O'Neill is a first minister. Unionists are now in disarray. And there is talk that we'll have a poll for Irish unity by 2030. And I think what Harris is sort of saying to all those young people who think that Rome and London and Paris are closer than Belfast and Derry is, look, we need to get engaged in a conversation about how we bring about unity. And personal relationships need to be embedded in a way so we all understand each other.
I think really what this talks to, and it's a shame it's kind of detracted from what is actually quite a useful conversation that he's trying to spark here, is that, and the BBC saw this a number of years ago, in that they knew they were becoming too London-centric. And they started farming out some of their news teams and production commissioning, or program commissioning and production, to Manchester and other parts of Britain. we have a problem here. There is a Dublin bubble. And unfortunately, it seems even politicians, a lot of politicians from the West and more rural parts of the country, when they go into Dublin, they actually come under this bubble. That, you know, the journalists and the politicians all talk to each other, slightly hive mind, unfortunately. They really, don't talk about decentralisation, but it would really help, I think, if they moved some of what they do in Dublin, be it journalism or politics, out of Dublin, to try and get a better understanding that you don't put your foot in it like they did with that type of language for us up here in the Northwest. Convoluted as bigara, but I hope it made some sense.
Now, Greg, I agree with you totally. Greg, one third of the population of Ireland lives around that greater Dublin area. And it's our whole politics, our whole journalism, everything that you can think of has become Dublin-centric. If you watch RT any night, you won't wonder Highland Radio took off like a bullet all those years ago, because simply we had been ignored for so many years. If they're doing a program about school meals, it'll be a school somewhere near Lucan. If they're doing a program about inner city poverty, it'll be somewhere out about Tala or something. They would never think of coming to Donegal and talking about rural poverty or whatever. I think most of the things this last while, Dublin has become so... it's a wonder, by the way, this place doesn't go like a seesaw, because Dublin, there's so much... Dublin's so heavy these days, and the other places are so light. It's ridiculous.
When I worked at Northwest Radio, I said, this is not a bad thing to say, but I'm not going to sort of not give an example if I have one. When I worked in Northwest Radio, it was based in Sligo, and there was a satellite station in Donegal. And there was quite a good bit of program as well, but you'd try and pitch stories for inclusion on the news. You know what I mean? You would notice that sort of the stories would be further down the bulletin than a lesser story about Sligo, which would be further up. But it would be quite frustrating. Mm-hmm. I would say there probably is quite a lot of frustration amongst correspondents that feed into the national stations in actually pitching stories and getting them on the programming, because there are brilliant correspondents right across the country. But ultimately, the editorial decision is still made in Dublin. And I think until such time as that changed, we're going to continue to see the path of least resistance, the handy stories, the Dublin-centric stuff.
And Greg, I was a sub-editor in RT many, many years ago, and I was actually on the desk one morning, and there had been a shooting in the north. Somebody had been shot dead. And there was a bus strike in Dublin. And I was the only sub-editor on the desk that morning, and I wrote the headlines for, I think, the 6:30 news. And the guy yelled, Jim Flanagan, who was a lovely man, by the way, came in and changed it. And he says, he put the Dublin bus strike ahead of the shooting dead of somebody on earth. And I said, Jim, no, I'm not arguing. You're the boss. But why did you switch it around? He says, Pat, a third of the people in Ireland live in Dublin. The bus strike will affect them more than the shooting in Belfast or Derry. I can't remember where it was, in fairness. And that was the reality of it. And that was the thinking behind switching my headline. I thought the shooting dead of a human being would be far more important than a bus strike, but I was wrong, apparently.
Well, what a way to leave it. Okay, Pat. And yet we're still here to this day. And as I say, and I think you perhaps a little more than I, both accept that what the Taoiseach was trying to say is important. It certainly resonates with certain people of his generation. To some extent is right. And it's a good conversation to have, unfortunately, slightly overshadowed by this non-inclusive language that just makes a big swathe
of the population.
Yeah, absolutely.
He could have chosen his words better, that's for certain.
Pat, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so very much indeed.
And you, Greg.
Appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Pat McCarthy there, author, columnist, podcaster, former editor of the Derry Journal. I want to say hello to Anne. And Anne is going through, unfortunately, what an awful lot of people are going through across this region, and I think particularly in certain areas of Donegal. Anne, good morning to you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Anne. Unfortunately, though, you had to seek out an appointment with your GP this morning in the Inishowen area. What was your experience?
Well, I actually, this was the second morning I rang. I rang on Friday morning, see if I could get an appointment, to be told that their books are closed until after the 7th of May.
Now, I'm going to have to hold you there a second. I want to hold you, Anne, because just in case people don't get the date, I want to remind people it's now the 16th of April. Anne phoned the GP for the second time and was told that the appointments book, i.e. an in-person meeting with the GP, is closed until the 7th of May next month.
Yes.
What else were you told?
Unfortunately for me, I have to see this specific GP because it's this person that I have been seeing for nearly the last year, and I am under a consultant in Dublin. Rang the consultant in Dublin this morning to be told that I can't be seen any sooner until the GP sends a letter with updated symptoms. I have severe nerve compression in my neck, and the symptoms are progressing. And so tried to ring on Friday, couldn't send me, so I thought, right, you know, I'll try and soul and hold out. But unfortunately, that's not going to work. So I rang this morning. Between 9 and 10, it's an emergency appointment. Couldn't get through, even though technically it's not an emergency. So I got through after 10, and to be told that the books are still closed till after the 7th of May. And I said, right, well, I need to speak to somebody. I need to be seen because I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. And basically was kind of fobbed off, and the attitude to me was tough. So I said, well, if I ring tomorrow between 9 and 10, will I be able to request my GP? No, you'll just get whatever doctor you get. And I said, well, right, that's not good enough. So unfortunately for me, I can't see my GP till after the 7th of May. And even then, there's no guarantee that I won't be waiting another month. So everybody's going to be ringing at the same time looking for an appointment.
So you did not see a consultant. So you didn't actually get an appointment for the 8th of May?
Oh, no. We have to ring back after the 7th of May.
And I mean, I suppose too. Let's talk about what an emergency is. Your bulging disc causing the nerve pain. This condition is getting worse. You haven't had a day free of pain for over a year, and also the lack
almost
of access.
A year, almost a year.
Yeah, the lack of access to a GP is actually also delaying your engagement with your consultant. So, I mean, if I was at an emergency to go, you'd go to the ED, right? So what's classed as a GP emergency? I'm sorry, I'm not a doctor, but this sounds like a personal emergency to you, Anne. You need this.
Yes.
You need to be seen.
Yes, I do. And but that's where I'm caught, you know. And if I can present an emergency letter again, as I've done numerous times in the last year, but unfortunately there's nothing they can do for me. So I end up having to go back to my GP who has prescribed different medications, X, Y, and Z. I was told I was going to be in Dublin in January that I was going to get a CT-guided nerve block in 6 to 8 weeks. I rang on Friday to find out that is not even possible. The CT room in the hospital in Dublin is closed since October, and they have a backlog of almost a year. So I can't get the operation, but I get the injection.
Okay, so just to be absolutely clear, the nerve block injection, you can't get that till you see your GP. You can't get the surgery until you get the nerve block. And in the meantime, your symptoms continue to worsen. It sounds to me like a terrible ordeal to be living in constant pain for almost a year. I mean, the problem is what can you do? This is also, too, by the way, where this has an impact beyond the actual condition someone has, because this is going to get you. It's going to wear you down, and no one is strong enough that they could put up with this. It's going to wear you down and affect yourself and those around you, I'm sure.
Yes.
As much as we try not to.
At this stage, I'm sure everybody around me is sick of listening to me. And not only that, the last time I was in casualty, I actually turned around and I told the doctor, you know what, I'm about ready to jump off a bridge at this stage. And he kind of looked at me. And I said, I'm not actually going to jump off a bridge, but I said, I can honestly see how some people over-medicate and accidentally overdose, or how some people cannot take the pain anymore. And unfortunately, we wonder why suicide rates are going up. That's another reason, because people are in pain and they're not being helped, not being seen. And there's only so much you can take before you can take no more.
Obviously, you know, we're just talking to you using your first name. I think you've also spoke on social media. This is a gamble too, because you would hope it doesn't, but could this make it more difficult for you to get an appointment after the 7th of May?
Well, it could. I haven't mentioned any names, and anybody that knows me will have an idea who I attend. But it's not just my GP, it's GPs in Inishowen, and I know this from having talked to different people that go to different practices. So it seems to be rife. And I don't understand. It's the first time in my life where I've ever heard of a doctor having books and being closed when has this become a thing that they have books that they close and then there's no appointments until they open their books again? When did this become a thing?
Yeah,
that's a doctor is somebody that you should be able to access as you need. I know there is people that run and maybe don't need to be seen as often as they are. And I know there's people like me that need to be seen and can't be seen. And it's just so frustrating because you ring looking for an appointment and you're met with people that maybe don't understand how much pain you're in. And then can't see anybody. And, you know, what do I do? Do I take extra medication? Do I hope that my GP won't tell me, right, you know, you shouldn't have spoke out, so bye-bye, you know?
Is there any cross-border options, Anne, given your location? But you're dealing with a specific
I'm
GP,
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, you're dealing with a specific GP. Yeah,
and I'm under, like, I have been seen by... not the actual consultant, but has registered doctors in Dublin twice. But they, like, it's almost like gaslighting because they're telling you, just keep taking the medication and see how you feel. Or we can't do the operation until we see how the nerve block works. But then there's no sign of a nerve block happening. I asked them, can they not just do the operation and be done with it? Because either it's going to work or it's not. And if it doesn't, at least I know this is something I'm going to have to cope with for the rest of my life.
You're just not going to, unfortunately, they're just not going to bend those rules in that regard. And listen, I mean, obviously, our GP practices in certain areas are dealing with a massive increase in population and an obligation also to take on extra numbers in some cases as well.
Yeah.
There was talk of this big fund to pump into certain areas. As it turns out, it's never going to transpire to sort of maybe increase, you know, GPs, nurses in certain areas where population has increased dramatically. But that's not going to happen anytime soon, if at all. It's certainly not going to happen for you. But you asked a really good question. When did this become a situation? This is like, you know, when did it become a situation where appointment books close at your local GP for the best part of 3 weeks? When did that become a normal situation? And also a caller says here, by the way, I was in the same position recently and was told to go to the GP door in the morning. The next morning I nearly died when I saw the queue doing the same thing. When the doors opened, it was like a sale. Everyone rushed for the reception desk. It's no wonder there's no appointments when people call. But that's another cohort of people who can't get an appointment. So they're turning up as like it's a fire sale for health. I don't know what to say to you, Anne. We get a lot of calls, and I think I can identify in which area it is, and a lot of them are similar, unfortunately, Anne. But I do also recognise there's an awful lot of pressure on GPs. But you need this.
Understand that. Yeah. I do.
But also, you're being disadvantaged, and you wonder why. Like, I mean, you are entitled to see your GP. You're entitled to get a letter. You're entitled to get your nerve block jab. You're entitled to get your operation. You're entitled for the best chance of a pain-free life. I don't blame you in any way, shape, or form. But something has to be done here because this is crazy, and people like yourself and others.
It's absolutely crazy because, you know, there's people that's waiting to see a GP with something very simple, which turns into something more serious because they're waiting weeks and weeks and weeks. And then in turn, that's making a casualty more busy. That's making the consultants more busy. You know, it's just like, I think there's a lot happening that people don't realise because somebody that could have a chest infection could turn into pneumonia, which is a hospital stay. You know, it's silly little things like that that we don't realise, and it's just then we can't see a GP.
Okay, all right.
It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating.
I know, Anne, and I can sense that. And I really, genuinely, by the way, I'm not just saying this, I really hope you get a resolution soon and you at least get on the pathway to give yourself a chance of getting pain-free because you don't really have any guarantees that you're going to go through all of this and it will work. But I pray it works, Anne, and I hope things move for
you. Yeah, well, this is it.
All right, Anne, thanks for contacting us.
Okay.
If there's something else you want to add,
Anne,
feel
much.
Free. If you want to, is there anything else you want to add?
Okay. No, I was just going to say that, like, I've come on here and I hope that if there is anybody that's listening today that thinks they need to see their GP, now's the time to ring because you're going to be waiting weeks.
Okay, Anne. All right. Thanks. Thank you very much indeed. Now, you're welcome back in back to the programme, I beg your pardon. We're welcoming on to the programme Leonie Rogers, who is sister of Patrice McCrossan of St Johnston. Leonie, thank you so much for joining us. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
We're also in studio with Kevin Shields from St Johnston as well, a family friend of Patrice. Thanks so much for calling up, Kevin. Very much appreciated.
Good morning, Greg.
Leonie, I know this is not easy, but maybe you might, as much as you're comfortable with, talk to us about Patrice's condition and its discovery and progression.
Well, Patrice was unwell since about Christmas time, and she just couldn't get better. So come the end of January, she was like, right, I'm probably going to have to go to the doctor. So she decided on a Friday morning to ring. The doctors couldn't take her. She was just really fatigued and all. And they end up, she couldn't get up the stairs. So she was like, I must have a chest infection.
And she's only 32 years of age.
Yeah.
So this is very unusual for a 32-year-old.
She had a baby 7 months beforehand and she had an easy pregnancy or delivery. And also she thought, it's just that, like things. But so she went, she got the nurse when the doctor couldn't take her. And she went in and the nurse had said, dear, she didn't like the colour of her, so she would rather go to the emergency department. Mm. And we think it's a blessing she got the nurse that day, because by the time she got to the hospital, her haemoglobin was down to 4. So they put her in the major emergency, and this was 4:30, and they had her a bed by 2 that night. Patrice didn't settle still. There was abnormalities in her blood. So they came in the next morning, diagnosed her with leukemia, hematology came in, and that was her. They were like, we're getting a bed ready for you in Dublin, or in Galway they were sending her. They says, you're going to be going for 4 months. We've been in contact with them, and she couldn't leave till she got her blood. She had to get 3 units of blood before she left Letterkenny. So it was the Sunday by the time then she went down to Galway, and that was her.
And this is just earth-shattering news. I mean, how could any individual or a family prepare for that?
Yeah, like you're sort of going on, it doesn't hit you. You're running on adrenaline and all, like just for even the weeks after, like for the first.
And presumably part of the transfer to Galway is to examine more the condition, how severe it is, what exactly it might be, how it might be treated. So that's test after test after test. How was that for Patrice?
The first week, really, really difficult. All the testing, the bone marrow biopsies and all, like to see what kind of leukemia she had. So they says then it was AML. That's the acute myeloid leukemia. So it's in the blood and bone marrow, but with myeloid, it's really aggressive. And it gets the cells when they're underdeveloped, and it just attacks, it takes over her whole body. So then it was to see what kind of treatment they were going to go in with this. Like she went down there and she was 90% cells covering her body, so they had to go on aggressive treatment.
So without an intervention at this point, she probably wouldn't be with us now. Is that?
I think if she didn't go to A&E on the Friday with her haemoglobin at 4, all her albs was so low that she mightn't have been there till the morning.
So it really from when she, how rapidly did it progress to the, you know, from where she felt, you know, there's something not right here, till actually going to the ED? How long a period of time was that?
Well, this was before Christmas. She felt unwell. Mm. But I think then when the leukemia, whenever the cells had changed or whatever, that she was, they says it was a few weeks. Like she didn't see the symptoms, but now that she knows about it, she did have symptoms that she didn't see.
Because it's not really how we associate cancer, is it really?
No.
It just
normally. She just got really, really weak.
Really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And as you say, between a recent pregnancy and stresses and tribulations, you put it down to other things,
like she had
you?
A bad dose, but she couldn't fight it off because her cells was, she had no fighting cells. Like she's neutropenic all the time with her condition.
So what is the treatment pathway now? What treatment is she in? What treatment?
She is in her second cycle now at the minute. Her first cycle, they went in, gave her an intense chemotherapy for like the first 3 days. She would get 3 rounds of chemo, and then she'd go 20 days with 2 rounds a day. It's really intense, and then it's all the infections that come with it and all. So by the end of that cycle, they do her biopsies, her bone marrow biopsies twice to see how it's going, and they want to be able to get the cells into remission. But at the end of the first cycle, after the aggressive treatment, they didn't get her cells into remission. So that determined then that she needs the bone marrow.
Now, the bone marrow transplant, it is like other things that we know in medicine, you require a match, don't you?
Yeah.
And those around her, the likes of yourself, aren't a match.
We're
so
not a
you've
match.
Had to go through that process
we
as well.
We got the genetic test, yeah. And that was done with just the blood drawn, but none of us was a match. We were hopeful that maybe out of four of us, like that one of us would be. So it's finding her a match now, but we have to see. She's probably on now at the minute getting another biopsy, the bone marrow, to see how the second cycle has went, how the cells is going. But, like, it's the infections and all that come with it. Like, you know, she's been lying. She's not too bad there at the weekend, but the weekend before, like, they were treating her under ICU guide,
so
in palliative care. And,
wow, okay.
You know, it's a really tough road for her.
Yeah.
And they hope now in the next 8 to 10 weeks that they would get a donor, find her a donor. So
she's a battler, but she has a battle on her hands.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no doubt she's a strong woman.
She's very strong.
In terms of seeking out a suitable donor, I don't know how that works, unfortunately, sorry. Is there like a panel or...
People have been in contact that they want to get on the register. You can't go on the register until you're a blood donor.
Mm.
So the way that they want people to check online to see if they're eligible to be a blood donor. And when they go to the clinic sorts them to get on the register.
Is there any indicators that someone might be a match for her?
No,
nothing geographical or relation or nothing like that there. It's just like it just so happens that another person would match.
You go on the register and you go on to a worldwide database.
Okay.
So they will see from there, just they go through that. Like,
so you're sitting there waiting, that hoping just the right person hears something like this, the right person is a blood donor or becomes one, the right person registers
to try and find a match.
Yeah. Okay.
Because this is the only thing, like the last time when they seen the cells couldn't go into remission, she's been told like she could go through these treatments, but it's going to come back. They can't save her. So this is her chance to save her life.
Yeah. And Leonie, how is her young family and all coping? I mean, her children are obviously they're under the care of the family and Gary and what have you, but they're so young, and her being apart from the children probably is almost as difficult as everything else she's going through.
Not easy at all. Not easy for any of them. Like Gary, like to be two places at once. So just trying to balance it all with all of us. The Wayne's are, like a wee three-year-old says one day, the hairdresser was uncutting their hair and he's like, do you want to stay and look after me? Because my mommy's away. They just...
Yeah.
He doesn't really understand, but the bigger ones, he knows his mammy's gone, but the bigger ones then, like her seven-year-old, I took her down at the weekend for a wee bit of one-to-one, and she lies up with Patrice when she's hooked up, and she's like, you know, mammy, why does this have to happen to our family? And Patrice is like, there's no answers. You can't. How do you answer them that?
You can't. It's absolutely impossible. Because you want the time with them, but then you have to...
Yeah,
Kevin, also friend John's. Leonie, by the way, you've done amazing. It's very, very difficult for you too, and you've done absolutely fantastic in just helping us understand. Kevin, I mean, who couldn't be moved by this story? I think particularly as horrible what Patrice is going through, but then when you think about the children, I think that gets everyone on a different level as well, on top of what we're already feeling. This is obviously it's the family that's affected. It's the friends and the community too. This is just a big shock for everybody.
Yeah, it was a big shock now when I came out at the start and all, and being the family of Patrice and Gary is, and the Duddy family and Rogers family, everybody was pulling together. So I was down in Galway at a rally and I met Willie Rogers, Patrice's brother, and had a talk with him down there about Patrice. So when I come back to Donegal then, and the Monday after the rally, I had to think about it, and I spoke to my wife, Fionnuala, about it. And then on Tuesday, I called Declan Boyle of Sonny McSween's McCafferty Group and said to Declan what I was thinking, maybe running a fundraiser to help the family, because it was, you know, I knew it was going to be a tough road for them, and expensive road for accommodations and stuff and all. So Declan told me, yeah, definitely go ahead and whatever... back in a need, he would be there. And so we set up a meeting all with Philip, the manager, and Mark, Emma, and Shannon. So we agreed with Wally it was okay with the family to help this fundraiser. So I started off to do something I thought was going to be small. And the first person I phoned was Donna Kelly about it. And Donna, right away, two Coldplay tickets valued at €1,000. And I'll give you first bid at €1,000, full VIP. And so that started the ball rolling, like. And since then, everybody has been fantastic towards the fundraiser, like. And, you know, I went outside then, like, to talk to different people outside myself and Sonny's desk. So I spoke to David Fisher from Oakfield and Niall McGonigal from IN Motorsports about a bit of advice on it. And they all gave me great advice. So I've been working very closely with Declan and his team. And as I say, we have got serious, serious donations in.
This auction is taking place on Friday the 19th at 7 p.m. in Sonny McSwine's in Letterkenny. It's in aid of Patrice McCrossan. And I suppose, Kevin, you know, you feel as a community, your friends or what have you, you can feel helpless in this situation. You know, you wish you could take it all away, but you can't. But what can you do if you can try and eliminate other worries, like the pressures in life, so that Patrice and Gary and the family can focus on getting her better? And that's what this is all about, isn't it, really? It's to support them.
Yeah, it's definitely a support for the family because, as you said, Greg, it's very hard in the family what they're going through, so they don't need that extra pressure of, you know, funding to keep them down in Galway and up in Dublin and all. So what the support, not just the funding, but knowing that the support of the people has behind them is just unreal what we're getting, like.
And listen, some of the lots are hitting on stuff that's hugely popular up here, of course. You mentioned the VIP Coldplay tickets worth over $1,000. Rally seats from the top 10 rally cars in Ireland.
Yeah.
Huge. Our own Jason Quigley, world title contender, a framed boxing gloves of his that would be a great thing to have. That and so much more besides. I think you've been really pleased with the generosity of those that you've approached. You haven't left you wanting.
Oh, everybody I've approached has been unreal. Like, you know, as I said, like the first I asked was Donna Kelly, Denrofo Boxing Club. Gloves, they'd off the wall, give it to me in the frame. Callum Devine, I phoned Callum. No bother, sir. That was his answer. Whatever you need, let me know. So they've all given seats. Even when I was in bed last night, I got a message from Matt Edwards, who's from Wales, who's given a seat out as well.
Oh, brilliant.
And, you know, it's unreal. Like, you know, but not alone just the rally and the other sports like soccer, Gaelic, from Brian McCormick and Michael Murphy, like, and
there's too much to mention, but there is a massive list of brilliant prizes, brilliant lots for this auction. And it is in McSwine's Letterkenny, in aid of Patrice McCrossan. And I suppose, you know, Leonie, when we're going through difficult times, we look at little things to sort of help us get us through. The reaction from the local community, but even more wider than that, backing Patrice and her battle and the family as a whole as well.
We can't believe it. Like, we just can't believe the generosity and the support from everyone. Like, they told Patrice on there that she says, I'm leaving you some of my hands to get me back up the road. And they says, you need loads of prayers too. And everybody's been rallying about praying and all. Like, Patrice didn't want to accept anything. She was like, no, some other creditor needs it. And now as the road's getting tougher, we see, like, we don't know what's going to be 6 months or a year from now. Like, we just...
Yeah, okay. This is a reminder to the importance of donations in terms of blood donations, which, of course, Patrice has had to rely on.
Get
yourself on the register too. Donating organs, or in this case, bone marrow. How do you find out more information about that?
On their website and at the blood donation clinics.
Okay, so you go.
We have one in Dunloe tonight, and there's two in Balbuffet the next two nights as well for people that do want to go to make an appointment or anything to.
But at this stage, her whatever makes up her bone marrow has been tested against an international database at this point, is it?
Everybody that goes on the register, it's not just Ireland, it goes on a worldwide one. So you could save somebody in Spain or whatever in the same situation.
Listen, go ahead, please, Kevin.
Yeah, just one more thing, Greg. Sonny McSwain's and McCafferty's have set up a GoFundMe page for people who can't attend the fundraising event on Friday night. And anybody that donates on the GoFundMe page, they'll be in with a chance of winning one of five prizes as well.
Okay.
Just to help people who can't make it on the night.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, listen, fair play. Yes, go ahead. Leonie, did you want to say something?
No, I'm
okay. Well done. You did brilliant. Leonie Rogers, sister of Patrice McCrossan of St. Johnson. Kevin Shields, also from St. Johnson, and a family friend of Patrice McCrossan. If you can, get along to that event on Friday night. And where can people find that website?
Do you find it on Sonny McSwain's
socials?
Yeah,
okay,
socials.
Brilliant, okay. Right, we'll link that, of course, on our socials. Thank you so much, both of you. Okay, students at St. Union's College Letterkenny are currently running a production of The Outsiders, adapted from S.C. Hinton's classic novel. It's on the 24th and 25th of April in on Green on Theatre Letterkenny. Tommy McIntyre is an English teacher in St. Union's College Letterkenny. He's going to frame this for us before we chat to some of those that are in studio with us, Tommy. So talk to me about this show.
Okay, so the show is taking place on the 24th of April at 8 p.m. and on Green and Theatre. It's based on S.E. Hinton's novel The Outsiders, written in the 1960s by Susan Hinton. Okay, she was 16 years of age when she wrote this novel, and it's selling 500,000 copies every year. So we decided, we had a drama club there, and we decided then to actually, you know, why not do our own adaptation of the novel.
Okay, and has this, it's been done before, you had, did you have a script to work off, or was it adapted, or what's the story? Pardon my ignorance.
No, we adapted the novel ourselves.
Oh, really?
For the stage, yeah.
Wow.
So there are a few small changes towards the end, but they don't actually infringe on the story itself.
It's, talk to us a little bit about the story of The Outsiders.
Okay, so it's set in 1960s Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's about a group of young men, like these men standing here, ranging from 14 years of age up to 20. They're called the Greasers. They're a close-knit bunch, again, like these guys here. And they have rivals called the Socias. And they're their rivals in social class. So the Greasers come from the less well-off area, and the Socias come from kind of the better area. And so, yeah, it's about their adventures together, yeah.
And great group of people to work with, presumably.
Oh, absolutely fantastic.
But there's
yeah.
a lot of work involved in getting this right.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely.
A lot of commitment.
Absolutely a lot of commitment. And Rachel McShane and Daniel Nealis and Fiona McDade have been absolutely fantastic. Rachel directs it along with Daniel Nealis, and Fiona does a lot of the staging and the props, yeah.
And was there recent awards won?
Yes, they took place at the Ballard Theatre. Drama competition took place down in Ballybofey in February, and we were fortunate enough to win 4 awards there, including Matthew as Best Actor there. So, yeah.
All right, brilliant stuff. And was that a performance of this or something else?
It was a 15-minute section of it.
Brilliant. So, and so you managed to win over the judges in 15 minutes. People are going to get a real treat then with the full show in a brilliant setting on the 24th and 25th of April in Ungreen. On tickets, obviously there's going to be a huge demand from parents and schools and others within the school, but tickets available currently, are they?
There are tickets available now. They are flying out the door quite quickly now. So
they always are.
Yeah, I know. So, so yeah, so it'll all go well.
Yeah, we are lastminute.com in this county and region. So if you want to get along to this on the 24th and 25th of April in on Green, and I suggest you contact the box office immediately. Right, so what are we going to hear now, Tommy?
You're going to hear the opening 2 or 3 minutes of the first act, first scene, where Ponyboy has just come out of the cinema. He's just watched a Paul Newman film, and he's about to have his first encounter with the Socias.
Dun, dun, dun. Right, okay, lads, whenever you're ready, take it away. I'll move this over here slightly there. Do you want to move Scooch in that way a bit? All right, go ahead. Right, curtain up.
I've always liked Paul Newman. He looks so tough. You need to be tough where I'm from. Even walking down around the east side, our territory, you really can't loan it. Greasers can't walk alone too much, or they get jumped. Someone drive by and shout, "Greaser!" But I just don't like going to the movies with anyone. Some people talk too much, and I kind of want to get into the movie and live the actors. It makes me, I don't know, kind of uncomfortable having people there, like someone looking over my shoulder when I'm reading a book. Well, that would not happen in my house anyways. Soda, my second oldest brother, would not crack a book if his life depended on it. And Daryl, who everyone calls Darry, well, he just works too hard to be into them. Or me, for that matter. Greaser! I really shouldn't be walking alone. Darry would get mad, real mad if he knew. I'm supposed to be a smart one, he says, making good grades and having a high IQ. Well, I guess he's just trying to be the grown-up in the house. Ever since Mom and Dad died in a car crash. Her gang, the Greasers, well, we steal things and drive old, souped-up cars and even have a gang fight now and again. Hey, Grease!
Well, you do not hear all alone, Greaseball.
Leave me alone.
Why, Grease? We just want to talk, shoot the breeze with you, and maybe, just maybe, give you a nice haircut.
What? Are you crazy?
Hey, Grease, how'd you like that haircut to start just below the chin?
Darry! Soda!
Oh, shut him up for Pete's sake!
Darry! Darry!
Shut it, Grease!
Hold it! Someone's coming!
See you around, Greaseball. That haircut's gonna have to wait.
You okay, Pony?
I'm good. Typical socias. I'll talk.
Damn socias! This is our territory!
Come on, Two-Bit!
Are you sure you're okay, Pony Boy?
I'm good, Johnny. Really. Just got scared is all.
You alright, Pony Boy?
I'm okay, Darry. Honest. Quit shaking me.
Sorry. They didn't hurt you too bad, did they?
You got cut a bit, Pony Boy. You're bleeding like a stuck pig.
They pull a blade on you.
Yeah.
Nah, they give us a slip. They're dirty.
Yeah, the kid's okay. He's tougher than he looks. I thought you were still in jail, Dal.
Nah, good out for good behavior. Nice bruise you got there, Pony.
Thanks.
Why are you out here on your lonesome anyway, kid?
I just didn't think.
Shit, eh? Brilliant, lads. Well done. Give yourselves a round of applause. Unfortunately, there's no one else here to clap. Okay, that is just a sample. And for those of you listening already, there's many different voices in there as well. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of those taken to the stage on the 24th and 25th of April in Ongreanon Theatre. And it is their production of The Outsiders. Tickets are available now, but are going out the door quick. So if you want to go and watch that, you need to get onto the box office. Thank you, everyone. Really appreciate it. Well done, teachers. Great to have you in. That was something different, something very enjoyable. All right, we'll be back with you on the 9 till noon show again tomorrow morning from 9.